Great time to tell you about Stihl, STIHL, stihldealers.com. There are more than 10,000 dealers around the country, and that's where you can pick up all the great Stihl products. And go to Stihl USA, again, STIHL, Stihl USA, and do some shopping for yourself, or maybe it's for a good friend, a loved one. Check them out. They got some wonderful deals going on as we speak. STIHL, been telling you about them for years. They are simply the best, and they have so many products to help you get the job done around your yard. STIHL, stihlusa.com.
This week on the Christmas edition of the Drew Goodman Podcast, Drew looks ahead to New Year's weekend with some predictions on the college football championship. We have some of Drew's best interviews from 2023. Charles Johnson on the Coach Prime phenomenon, Nolan Arenado, and the new Nolan, Nolan Jones. Plus, remembering the great George Frazier. Subscribe to the Drew Goodman Podcast wherever you find podcasts and tell your relatives. This is the Drew Goodman Podcast.
Welcome in. It is show number 234. Merry Christmas. Almost Happy New Year. Hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful Christmas and got everything you wanted, and everybody was pleased with what you got them as well. We're going to do our second best of, started this tradition, I think, a year ago, of the year, and that'll get us through 2023 into 2024. A lot of big things happen in 2023. And I'll speak to that in one moment. But before, I would be remiss if I did not at least give, you know, I'm not big on predictions and breaking down games, but we love college football on this program. And in front of the college football playoff, I thought I would throw my 2 cents, and that's about all it's worth, into the arena. You have Alabama taking on Michigan in game one. And the interesting thing is, from an odds standpoint, to win the whole college football playoff, Michigan, the first seed, is the odds on, I don't want to say the odds on favorite, but they have the best odds, according to Vegas. And then Alabama, who's the 4 seed, would be number 2 in that. I'm going to pick an upset. I think Alabama, with Jalen Milroe, who leads a quartet of quarterbacks in this college football final, that college football playoff, that's really fascinating to me, because all 4 can play. They're all a little bit different. But Milroe, in terms of his throwing in the football, I would put him down the list of the 4 that are going to compete for a college football national championship. But Milroe has come on like gangbusters, and he's the toughest to bring down. He extends plays, as do the others. But I think Alabama's playing great football, and I think Alabama's going to end up winning the whole thing. So I haven't beaten Michigan in the first game. I think Texas and Washington may be the most entertaining, because I think some points are going to be scored in that one. I don't think Washington's defense is as good as the other 3 teams, though I love watching Michael Penix throw the football. I think he's the best pure passer of the group. Don't sleep on Quinn Ewers, obviously. I think Texas beats Washington. I think it's Texas, Alabama in the national championship, which would be fitting because Texas earlier beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa, as everyone knows. You get a rematch there, and I think Alabama comes out on top. So that's how I see the college football playoff going. It's going to be a blast to watch. And we'll go from there. A lot of people have reached out to me. I've done some things on Cameo with the Dodgers and all of their signings. And now Yoshi Yamamoto signs for over $300 million. And so they'll have a pitching staff in 2025. They'll have a pitching staff, if everyone stays healthy, of Yamamoto, who by all indications is an ace, should be an ace at the big league level. Otani will be back by then, one would assume. And let's not forget the other guy that no one's spoken of outside of Southern California that'll be back next year, who's an ace, and that's Walker Buehler. Pretty good threesome, but it guarantees them nothing. We'll get into that more a little bit down the road. It's nice to be able to spend over $1 billion. I didn't even mention, you know, I said the big 3. I forgot Tyler Glasnow. They got Tyler Glasnow also this year. We'll see what it means, because the Padres had an all-star lineup last year and they barely finished 500. But I want to get to our best of. You know, when I look back on 2023, I'll share with you the genesis of this podcast, which goes back now, you know, going on 5 years. Started it with Julie Brauman, and we worked together for a period of time. And the whole thing that motivated me to get into this podcast world, of which it seems like everyone has a podcast these days, was twofold. You have opinions on things on certain days or when, you know, a topic or a happening occurs, and you want to weigh in. And when I was doing talk radio, you had to weigh in on things you could care less about. You know, you had to do it every day and you had to fill up 3 hours. And talk radio can be a blast when there's something very compelling going on, but oftentimes there is not. But the podcast allows you to sound off on the subjects that you want to at the length that you want to. And the other maybe most important element to podcasting for me and why I jumped into this universe was I've always loved the long form interview. I have always enjoyed getting in depth with someone of interest, someone that, you know, you want to have a conversation with. And I hope that most of these quote unquote interviews are less interviewee, if there is such a word, and more conversational, where it's two people conversing and hopefully it's about topics that you have an interest in. So the long form interview is something that I've always enjoyed. The podcasts I listen to typically are folks having conversations with people I find interesting. And that's why I jumped in that space. And so with that, I lead you into our second grouping of our best of 2023. We say best of for lack of a better term, but at least some interviews I thought we would revisit. There are three folks. Charles Johnson, longtime member of the media in our town after a very nice career at the University of Colorado as a quarterback. He came off the bench, as you know, when Darren Hagan got hurt and won a national championship with the Buffs way back in 1990. And we talked about the prime phenomenon. And the other two that you're going to hear as we close out 2023, the two Nolans. The next Nolan for the Rockies, Nolan Jones, who was the team MVP. And the former Nolan, who was adored by all Rockies fans, and then, of course, the departure, which no one was pleased with, when Nolan Arenado went to St. Louis. And those are our three subjects to close out 2023. But let's begin with the biggest story in Colorado sports. I'll defer to the Nuggets, so I'll say the second biggest story in Colorado sports this year, and it became one of the biggest national stories, and that was the Coach Prime phenomenon in Boulder. And I pick it up just 2 weeks in, both victories over TCU and the strong second half that allowed Colorado to blow out Nebraska, and all of the sports world had descended upon Boulder, Colorado. Again, they're 2-0. They're preparing for Colorado State, which turned out to be one heck of a football game. But I sat down with Charles Johnson, and we talked about this prime phenomenon.
I'm trying to figure out which is more surprising to me, the speed in which the wins began to come, you know, sitting now at 2-0, or the attention nationally that this program is getting. You look at, I mean, we're everywhere. We're lead stories on broadcast. I've seen us on Good Morning America. I've seen the brand, you know, College Game Day and Big Noon Saturday. I can't figure out which is more surprising to me, how quick it all came together in terms of wins and losses, or just how fascinated I think the nation has become and interested the nation has become with its EU/Dion primetime Sanders story.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'll be honest, going in, and I said it, you know, on this podcast, that I am more intrigued to watch CUTCU. We'll go back a couple of weeks. Than I have any Colorado football game in at least 20 years, and maybe quite frankly back to almost your era. Though, as you know, Colorado maintained, even after Coach Mack left, they maintained a high level of excellence initially with Rick Neuheisel and to a certain degree with Gary Barnett as well. But I wanted to see what it looked like. But having said that, CJ, you played this game at a high level. To take 75, 85 new kids and just say, hey, we're going to mold them together, even if they're more talented, and we're going to be a winning football game from Jump Street, that doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. And to your point, I'm on record as saying I thought the TCU win was the most impressive victory, at least in the time that I've been around, and that dates back to 1987 for CU football. It was in part because of the lead up, everything you just said, right? I didn't know how fast it could come together. To see what that team accomplished against that level of opponent, to me was the most impressive victory. And I know we've had some impressive ones, Drew. You've been around for all of them, right? And, I'm fascinated with it. I go back to, I think, the 2001 Big 12 championship game. I think it was CU versus Texas. I think that was that's the last game that was as intriguing or as impressive, as you will, as what we witnessed, CU versus TCU.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And I've got to ask you something, that you and I are of similar age. We watched Prime play. We watched Deion Sanders, who is the fastest guy maybe I've ever seen in football equipment. We also watched him play Major League Baseball, where he was an impactful player. That is our generation. What do 18, 19, 20-year-old kids know about Prime other than watching YouTube videos, and why the fascination with him?
That is an amazing, that question right there is one that confounds me to some degree. Here's what I believe. I think Coach Klein has a unique, given that he's our generation, right? He has a unique ability to communicate to, the current generation or the younger generation. And I hear echoes of it in all of his press conferences. He's almost speaking with them as opposed to preaching to them. And you look at how he runs his program, I think this is what makes a lot of sort of the college football traditionalists uncomfortable. It dawned a lot of criticism from, again, the traditionalists before the season. Prime has this unique way of being a disciplinarian in a way that's inviting to these kids. You can wear your bling. You could wear your, you know, you could do your thing. You know, you... Listen, he promotes the social media engagement stuff, right? He speaks their language. And at the same time, I think the trade-off is that they're more willing to accept what he demands from them. He's found that sweet spot, Drew, that I think a lot of us from our generation who can get a little preachy towards, the younger generations haven't been able to do. And I think that's the Prime magic and why he's been so successful so early.
Yeah, that's well put. You had an interesting story because you went down to Fort Worth to watch the opener against TCU. Retell that story you shared with me yesterday about, you know, seeing about 20 different folks and just conversing with, I can't remember if you were at the stadium or hotel lobby yet, but retell that story.
Yeah. So I'm at the hotel the night before the game. And we're in Fort Worth, and there's this buzz. It felt more like a bowl game type of environment than, you know, a regular season game, albeit the first game of the season. So I took note of that first. I'm noticing all of these people, and I'm 100 years old, so it's not surprising that I didn't recognize a lot of the faces other than some of the, you know, the administrators and people who've been around for a while. But I'm noticing all these new faces, and I'm caught up in the buzz as well. But I want to get to know, are you all, you know, family of players, those, that type of thing? So there was a group of about 20 or so people, and I'm beginning to just survey them, sort of probe them one by one, like, what's your interest in the program? Are you a parent or family member? And of the 20, Drew, about 9 or so had zero affiliation with CU. They were not parents or siblings to, or related to players. They were not alums. They were not, they had no real affiliation to it. I was fascinated with their explanation for having CU gear on and being at the team hotel, just kind of caught up in the euphoria. They were followers of Coach Prime. And three of them had actually flown in from, I think, North Carolina just to witness and be a part of game one. That was fascinating to me.
Well, as we know with Coach Prime, that was the high point. You know, probably the victory the next week over Colorado State in overtime. And then it didn't go as well. But it's going to be fascinating again to watch next fall and all of the changes again. Maybe not quite the same number of new players, but, you know, a lot of celebrated high school players coming and some players in the portal again. But all eyes will be on Boulder next year. What an amazing story. I think back to my time going on 40 years and covering sports. And I'm like, I don't know if I've ever seen quite a story the first few weeks that Deion Sanders was in Boulder, Colorado. We are going to transition back to baseball. A rough year for the Rockies. That's an understatement. They, for the first time, lost over 100 games. They're playing younger players. We've talked about that incessantly throughout the second half of the year. What's fun about that is you see players emerge, and I don't think anyone can deny that one of the great things about watching the Rockies, if you can put great and Rockies in the same sentence in 2023, I mean, that's hard to do, but was seeing the emergence of the young shortstop, Ezekiel Tovar, and a guy the Rockies traded for that was well thought of in Cleveland's organization and got off to a very slow start with the Rockies. In fact, such a slow start in spring training that Nolan Jones did not make the club. And yet at the end of the year, Nolan Jones was, as I said a moment ago, probably the team MVP. So we pick up with Nolan Jones right after the season ended.
I grew up in a household of four siblings. My dad still wakes up at 4:30 every morning to go to work. He grinds. I've loved competing my whole life, and I truly, like, I take it as such a compliment that it gets noticed, you know, but I just love playing baseball. I love winning. I love being around the guys. You know, me and Charlie Blackman were the last two in the clubhouse yesterday. We grind all off season. We work our butts off, and you know, I love playing baseball. I love being in the locker room with my teammates. I love the travel. I love all of it. There's so many cool, exciting parts. It's what I dreamed about my whole life. And I just like playing the game the right way. I think it's something that I take pride in. My dad, from a young age, I remember I was 12 years old, and we were in a state tournament and we were up a couple runs. It was a 3-0 count. My dad was a third base coach. He gave me a tape sign. And I swung, and I popped out to the shortstop, and I walked back to the dugout. I didn't take any steps towards first base. I just walked back to the dugout. I grabbed my glove. My dad said, "Put your helmet on and run down to first base." I was like, "Dad, the inning's over. The pitch is already warming up." He said, "Put your helmet on and go run down to first base." And so I put my helmet on, and I ran down to first base, and she said, "You play the game the right way no matter what." And I think that's, you know, something that I take pride in, is playing the game the right way. No matter what, I want to go out there, I want to compete, I want to show that I care, because I and everybody in that clubhouse does. And I just want to play the game the right way.
Yeah, I love that story, man. Good for your dad. Because there's a teaching moment in everything, and no one ever knows that moment in time that will resonate with an individual forever. And you know, you're a big leaguer now, but you can flash back to when you were 12 years old, and that time you didn't run out of pop. Not to mention you weren't supposed to swing 3-0. So there you go. I want to ask you about another growth moment. You admittedly did not have in your first opportunity to impress a new franchise. You did not have a good spring, and you were sent to Albuquerque. And I'll take it one step further. I can't remember the particulars. There was an injury. You got called up, and you were here for 3 days. When I say here, in the big leagues for 3 days, you never got a tap on the shoulder to start one of those, I think, three games. You never pinch hit, and then you were sent back to Albuquerque. What, take us through spring and also that first time with the Rockies in the big leagues where you don't get to play.
Yeah, so I mean, spring training was a tough one for me. Spring training is always a little tough for me. I feel that I'm a long-limbed guy that does a good job of controlling the strike zone. I think it's something that I've always taken pride in. And it takes me a little while to get going. You know, it's hard to get live reps in the off season from big league arms. I hit the machine. I hit any way possible that I can, whether it's, you know, wiffle balls or whatever. I love to hit. And so I do as much as I can. And every year going into spring training, I do start a little slow. But this year was a little different. You know, I got traded over to the Rockies. And when I was traded, I was told I had an opportunity to make this team. You know, I was told that there's not a starting nine that is just – that they're rolling out there no matter what. There were spots that were up for grabs. And, you know, I heard that loud and clear. And I worked my butt off this offseason. And I wanted to go in and I wanted to stress. And I put a little too much pressure on myself. I think I didn't enjoy spring training this year. I've always enjoyed, like I said earlier, I've always enjoyed being with the guys. You know, I was meeting a whole new group of guys. I got to be in a locker room with Charlie Blackman, Chris Bryant, Brian McMahon, all these big name guys. It's such an opportunity to get to learn from these guys. And I wanted to impress, show that I could play. And you know, there's no secret that didn't happen. I struggled a lot. And when I went to AAA, I remember I had a conversation with my parents. It was like, Dad, I don't know what happened. Like, I worked harder than I've ever worked. I trained, I hit, I did everything more than I ever have. And, you know, I had the worst spring of my life. And I remember my girlfriend, my mom, my dad talking to them, and they were like, you just had fun. You didn't enjoy it. Like, it wasn't the results you didn't enjoy. It was you didn't enjoy showing up at the field. You just enjoy all those little things that you always enjoyed. And I think that was something that, you know, I really took into AAA. I was blessed with an unbelievable group of guys and coaches in Albuquerque, and we had a really good time. So we made it fun. Obviously, there was a couple guys there that thought they had a chance to be in the big league and did have a chance to be in the big leagues, and we wanted to enjoy it. We had a really good time. And then, you know, when I got called up that first time, I was playing really well in AAA. I was playing really well in Albuquerque, better than I ever have. And I really thought it was going to be my opportunity. You know, when you get called up to the big leagues, it you never know how it's going to go. You never know what it's going to look like. You don't know if you're going to be there for 3 days or 2 months or the rest of the year. I packed up my whole apartment. I packed up everything I own. And I got my car shipped to – actually, my girlfriend drove to Denver because I said, hey, like, let's go. This is my time. And, you know, I went up and I went for – an off day and then three games thinking that I was going to get an opportunity and I didn't. And it wasn't easy for me. You know, it was extremely frustrating. I thought, you know, like I said, I thought this was my opportunity to come up to the big leagues and show that I belong and show that I could help the Rockies win. But that didn't happen. You know, I took my couple hours to sulk about it and talk to my people. And I think, you know, the same thing came back to me was that I needed to go back and keep doing what I was doing. I needed to go have fun. I needed to enjoy the people in Albuquerque, and when the time is right, I'll get my opportunity. And I think that no matter what, you know, everything happens for a reason in life. And I think if it was, you know, just another motivator for me. Yeah, I think there's multiple ways to look at every situation in life. You know, stuff happens, like good, bad, stuff happens all the time, and there's always two ways to look at it. You can use it as like, oh, now I hate the Rockies, I don't want to play for the Rockies, or you know what, I'm going to prove the Rockies wrong. I'm going to prove the Rockies that they do need to call me up. They do need to have me in their lineup. When I get up there and get my chance, get my first at bat, like I'm going to show them that I belong here.
Really excited about his future. How can you not be? He is driven. He's got, I'll steal a phrase you hear or a line you hear a lot now in sports. He's got dog in him, right? D-A-W-G. He's a great competitor. He's driven to be great. Big fan of his, Nolan Jones. And so from one Nolan to the first Nolan in town, the first beloved Nolan, and that, of course, Nolan Arenado. We know how this ended with the Rockies. And this summer, I sat down with Nolan in St. Louis at Busch Stadium, and I found a reflective and very candid Nolan Arenado. Here's that conversation once again. I said something on the air last night, and I said I had to repeat it. I said the Cardinals have finished last in their division once in 100 years. How long did it take you to realize when you came here that it's just different?
Not too long. I mean, I think there's an expectation here, and from the fans too, they'll let you know a little bit. And obviously this year has been really tough for us, and it's not quite as fun as the last 2 years have been, but it's part of it. And we're just trying to grind away, find ways to get better. And but this organization expects a lot, and that's what I love about it.
Every day that you get up, what self-motivates you?
It's pretty simple. I mean, I think, you know, obviously I want to go out there. There's an opportunity to be great. Doesn't mean I'm going to be that day, especially with baseball, but there's always an opportunity to go do something. And then a time like this where you're kind of out of it and, you know, playoff picture is not looking very good at all. You just try to go out and compete, set the example. There's still a lot to play for. And, you know, I still want to reach. There's still goals I have for the season that I still have an opportunity to reach, and I still want to do them.
Yeah. You've always grinded. We've had a million conversations about how you go about your business, going back to, remember George, the late George Frazier, telling me stories about when he'd see you in Tulsa. Yeah. Does it seem like, wait a second, that was 5 minutes ago, and now I've been at this thing for a decade?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, now I'm 32. It's really different, you know. I'm one of the older guys now on the team, and I remember, you know, obviously being in Colorado all those years, you know, I was usually one of the younger guys, and then now I'm here and I'm one of the older ones, and by a little bit, you know. There's a guy on our team that's 20, literally 12 years older than him, and we don't have anything in common, and you know, besides baseball, loving the game and just trying to be good every day. But it's just kind of crazy when you see that.
Have you allowed yourself to be smarter with how hard you work? And you know where I'm going. I mean, you take your ground ball. Yeah. You make sure you get your swings in the cage and out on the field. Or do you allow yourself to back off at all in the interest of being ready at 7 o'clock?
Absolutely. I definitely have to. It's definitely different. The last 2 years, I've kind of learned to change the way I train and the way I go about my business, which has been tough, but because I like to hit a lot. But there's definitely times this year where I've hit too much, and the next day I couldn't move. My back was hurting pretty bad. So, you know, there's little things that I have to really keep up with, but there's also things I have to like take care of. And it's taking a little bit less ground balls, especially in this heat in St. Louis, taking a little bit less ground balls, less swings, help make sure I'm fresh for a 7 o'clock game.
One of the things that was so cool for me, and I can't imagine for you, when I was watching you guys play last year, whether it was against the Rockies or watching on television, and Albert got hot late, and you know, I think everybody who loves the game wanted to see him get the 700. But for a while, he thought, man, that may still be a reach. And he blew past it. How cool was it to be on the field with him, in the clubhouse with him?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. One of my favorite things of my career ever is literally just being a part of that and being on the same team as him. Watching him go about his work every day. To me, the greatest right-hand hitter ever. But just watching the way he prepares and all that. You know, he would say not a lot has changed. You know, he probably takes a little bit less swings, but Unbelievable. I mean, he literally carried us, you know, because I got cold in September. I know Goldie wasn't feeling great in September either. He literally carried us. And every time we needed a big swing, he did it. So, I mean, just unbelievable what he was doing. And obviously watching him hit 700 in LA was just crazy, man. And he said he was going to do it there too. So it was awesome.
Do you remember the first thing he said when he got to the dugout?
No, man. I think we were all just screaming like, dude, I can't believe you just did that. And then I know in the locker room after when we give him a toast, just the team, we were just kind of like all in awe of like what we just witnessed, you know, and because we don't really realize what it is. And then, you know, and then when you like think back, you're like 700 homers. That is so many homers. You know, it's just like me and Goldie combined don't even have that. You know, it's just like crazy to think about the things that he's accomplished in this game.
Yeah. And you know, because you're you're an automatic 30 plus homer guy. And all you got to do is like 20 plus years of that. And you're only at 600,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's crazy.
It's crazy to think about what he's done in this game. Seriously. When you look at the numbers and I mean, I'm in awe.
Was there one thing that you take away if somebody asks you like I'm doing now or 15 years from now, the one thing or two things that he imparted to you or you observed that helped you with your game?
For sure. I mean, I think there's a few things. One is, you know, well, first off, the first thing I would take would be there's things he can do and I definitely cannot do, right? Like he would say, like, I'm going to sit on this pitch. I'm going to hit it out. He would strike out next about he'd get that pitch and he hits it out. You know, like he would do things like that. And he would talk about doing them. I would never talk about doing those things. I would talk about sitting on it, but I wouldn't sit here and say, I'm going to sit on it and I'm going to hit this pitch out. And he would do those things. Like there's just things you do. You're just like, this is unbelievable, you know? And, but you know, his routine, you know, he always has his routine. He sticks to his work. He doesn't like shy away from anything. Even when things aren't going the way he wants them, he still sticks with his routine. That was something that I learned from him that I really appreciated.
What about Goldie? Because I think everybody who loves baseball, again, especially here in St. Louis and the surrounding area, were thrilled when you came here. And then now you had arguably the two best corners in all of baseball. First of all, how excited were you to play with him, a guy you played against so many times when he was in Arizona? And what'd you learn from him?
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot. I mean, Goldie's probably the best fundamental player I've ever seen. He really is like a five-tool player. He may not be like the fastest guy, but he steals bags, hits for average, hits for homers, great defense. I mean, he does all the little things. And the one thing with Goldie is that he prepares better than anybody I've ever seen. And he takes so much pride in the little things of the game, how to touch the base, how to round the base, all these little things that like get an edge on the player or on the pitcher. He's by far the best. Charlie was like that when I was in Colorado, all those little things. But Goldie takes it to a whole new level. And then obviously just playing with him and watching him win the MVP, you know, was unbelievable. And but like I said, the little things, he focuses on those so much. And then obviously they come into fruition throughout the season.
Is it now, I don't want to say old hat, but when you come back to Colorado and fans always obviously cheer for you, what are your emotions now that you're a few years removed from the trade?
I mean, obviously I love going back. There's a lot of restaurants I love to eat at. There's a lot of places I love to eat at. There's people I love to see. The team is, you know, every year I get away from, every year I'm away from Colorado, the more players I don't know. You know, Freeland's over there still, McMahon, I know, you know, Kinley, Bard. There's only really a few players now, you know, and there's a lot of new young players, which are, some of them are pretty good, but, you know, I know Marquez is her and Senza and those guys. So those guys too. But it's just kind of like the more I'm away from them, the more I'm like, now I'm getting really unfamiliar with the players and who they are. You know, it's just kind of how it is nowadays. So, you know, that's just another reason why I'm getting older. But, and Chuck. Sorry, I can't forget Chuck. But it's just a little bit different as far as that goes. But I still appreciate everybody there. I still love going back there. I love that field. Like I said, I love living in Colorado. I lived in downtown and I loved it. So, you know, at the time, and there's things I miss about it for sure.
Have you reconciled now? And again, you're 32 and we all mature. We all evolve. I just turned 60. I like to think I'm trying to be better than I was when I was 58, you know, all those things. But have you reconciled in your mind what went down, how it went down, and where are you today when you think about it, if you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some things I wish I could take back with how it went down, maybe letting it get public there. That's one thing I do regret about it. Was talking to the media about any of those things. That's one thing, I guess, when I was a little younger and I was frustrated and my emotions got the best of me in that time. That's the only thing I regret about how I went down. But me getting moved was, I think, important. for me and my career. I think it was important for them too. I think that's about it. You know, I guess the one regret I have is I wish we would have had, you know, like we had a pretty good group, you know, it was kind of fun, you know, me, Story, DJ, Cargo, you know, like it was a pretty cool group of players, pretty good ones. So I wish we would have accomplished more, but I also wish we would have kept a lot of guys there, those guys back too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because 2018, as you know, the club has never won a division. 2018, you guys were right there finishing a dead heat. I still think about that series in September in L.A. And I know as many games as you played, as many ABs. Do you go back every once in a while and go, man, we were right there?
Yeah, we were right there. Exactly. I mean, I think about like the heartbreak games. I remember we were like beating Texas by like four with one out on the ninth in Texas. I don't know if you remember that. And we lost that game. Cincinnati, we had bases loaded. Dahl was up, down one, lined down to a double play. I think about that game. There's obviously a few other ones. I wish we would have added a few more pieces at the break. I think that we probably would have got over the edge if we would have done that. I think we added Butera and Sing 1-0, which they helped us tremendously, but maybe a few more I think would have got us over the edge.
Yeah. You know, it's wild that, again, you have played as many games as you have. I broadcast a million games. I can't remember shit, all right? Yeah. You remember specific instances.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, bits and pieces, but that's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just times like, you know, in Colorado, and, you know, there's a lot of heartbreak. It gets some wild games there, and there's a lot of heartbreak games sometimes there because of the field and just how things turn out. And 2018 was a special year. We had a really good team. But I think about some of those losses because those are tough ones. You know, those are the ones we needed because we tied the division. And if we just win that one extra game, we win the division. And then I also think about the series because we played Washington. We won the first game. I think LA lost the second game. Or no, they needed a sweep. San Fran, I think, and they swept them, right? And then we got killed by Washington the second game. That hurt. And then we beat them bad. We beat them that game. But as tough as that was, it was still fun winning in Chicago.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It was like you guys were like a traveling circus at that point. Game in LA, game in Chicago, game in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that probably hurt us a little bit in the playoffs as far as traveling, get a little tired and stuff like that. But yeah, that was fun.
How cool a moment was it for you in 21, back at Coors Field, All-Star game? You know, that was your place.
Yeah.
And the crowd, international audience, yeah, could celebrate what you've done.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like I said, I don't know if I deserved that, but it meant a lot to me. You know, I loved it. I really appreciate the fans for appreciating me. And yeah, man, it was unbelievable. The All-Star game was unbelievable. Even just going back in 21 was unbelievable. For a while there, after I left in 21, after I was like, I don't want to ever go back, you know, because it's a weird feeling, you know, when you face a former team. You know, I was like, I don't want to go back there again. You know, I don't want to see old faces. I don't want to like people that I have to face. You know, there's all those things, you know. But now that I'm getting fears away from it, there's like less people I know. But, you know, it's always tough when you face people that you care about, like Freeland and Marquez and these guys that, you know, you grinded with and went to the playoffs with.
Yeah. As motivated as you were to be great, and I'm sure you set the expectations for yourself high because no one can achieve if they don't have high expectations. Do you ever stop maybe in the off season during a lift or when you're in the cage in November getting ready for another season and go, wow, I may have exceeded what I thought I could do?
Yeah, I think I've done more than I expected to do for sure. But now that I'm here, this, you got to keep, you know, you got to keep going, right? I mean, I remember Tulo or Todd, I think it was Todd, told me that, you know, just because you hit 30 homers once, guess what? Now everyone expects you to do it again. So, you know, now there's expectations every year and that comes with pressure. And so I got to make sure I prepare. And so usually I do sit back and say, man, I kind of achieved more than I wanted. But then I also get like that demon in me, in my head, that also tells me that, like, you better not let up because you're not going to play as well anymore. So, you know, I know my time is coming to an end. I'm more on the back end of my career. Not too bad, but I know I'm more on the end of it. But there's still, the expectations are still very high.
I remember having a conversation with the guy you just referenced, Todd Helton, really late in his career. Nowhere, I mean, like he was 37, 38. I mean, it was near the end. And I said, what are you working on today? And he said, I'm trying to get better. And he was dead. You know how Todd is. He was dead serious.
Yeah.
And that struck a chord with me. Forget whether it's baseball or you're a weather person or you're a business person, whatever it is, no matter where you are, you're trying to get better. And I've always felt that's you.
Yeah, I do. No, I appreciate that. That's something I do apply. I mean, I already have a plan set for the offseason. Got a sprint coach ready for me. I got my trainer ready for me. There's so many things that I've already that I noticed this year that I know I'm doing well, but I'm not doing it as well as I want. So I already have these things set up ready for me in the offseason. So when I get back to offseason, I have it planned out, ready to go, ready to run, do sprints, agility, making sure I just keep up, you know, and there's no reason why I should let up now. I mean, I feel I got 4 or 5 really good years of baseball left in me, really good, and that's my goal.
You know what, Noel, one other thing I remember him saying to me, he said that at the end of the year, that's when he could finally kind of take a deep breath, let his hair down, you know, all his idiosyncrasies and superstitions, he could let it go. And really what he was saying is, I can enjoy life more, as great as he was at the game. And again, I look at you, I've seen how you grind from close and from afar. Do you allow yourself to enjoy it now more than maybe you did 5, 6 years ago?
I think so, a little bit more. I mean, there's definitely times, I mean, I could probably count on like, you know, honestly, I could count on 3 fingers how many seasons I really enjoyed in my career. From like 2017 was awesome, right? Played really well. Went to the playoffs for the first time. 2018 was really fun. Played bad in the end. I played bad in like September. I didn't have a great second half, but we played great. Went to the playoffs again. 2019 was fun. Played well. But, you know, like last year was like really fun. Like I really felt like I didn't get as mental and as frustrated. You know, there's just like certain years you could count. But there's definitely years where you're like, man, I didn't really enjoy. Like, I don't know, you don't sit back as much as you want, I guess.
Listen, man, it's great catching up. You have a lot of fans back in Colorado. And whether it's 10, 15 years down the road and you come back to town, will that be okay for you to be celebrated again?
Yeah, I would love to come back. I mean, obviously, I want my kids or my baby, my girl now, when I get older, see where I play ball, where I started my career. And like I said, I got a lot of love for Colorado. I'll definitely be going there to visit.
Stay safe. Stay well, my friend.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Nolan's been able to turn the page. I mean, the Cardinals had a disappointing year. His run of gold gloves ended this year. He still, in my mind, will be a Hall of Famer one day. If you could rewrite history, he never would have left the Rockies. I think I speak for the masses in that regard. But it happened. It happens in sports. Disappointments happen. And I think he's been able to move on. And I give him a lot of credit for, you know, his candor in talking about what went down and where he is today. And he, you know, seems to be more at peace. I mean, this is a guy that's super driven, like the previous Nolan you were listening to. And we'll see what's in store down the road for Arenado. I wish he was the Rocky, like all of you, but he's a guy that I will continue to root for. As we close 2023, this is a tough one because, you know, you always want to be upbeat and you always want to be looking forward. And we'll do that in 2024 and what will be the great sports stories around the country and specifically in our region. But I would be remiss if I didn't take a few minutes to talk about somebody very dear to me and I think dear to many Rockies fans that we lost in 2023. And that's my former partner, George Frazier. Loved him immensely. He was a great, great character of the game and a great friend to all he knew.
Thought I would reach out to one of my partners, Ryan Spielborgs, and get his thoughts and memories of Frazier.
You know, I've been reminiscing, as we all have the last couple of days, about Frazier. And I guess this is a really positive thing in a horrible situation that when we've talked, we're always smiling and we're retelling stories. And that's a hell of a legacy.
I mean, that's what you want, right? Like to be remembered by friends. I was joking with you the other day, you know, like George wouldn't want us to be sad if he passed away. He'd want us to eat some bacon and like, you know, it's so funny, like all the friends and we have like all these different logs and people were sharing funny George stories. So I mean, that's kind of, I like saying, like, you live your own dash, you know, from when he was born to when he passed away, like, his dash was his own. And I oftentimes, you know, you kind of, you hope that you have a life where people, if you do, and when you do pass, that people are like, you know, it brings the best out of them, you know, whether they're telling funny stories or, you know, like they know it's a celebration. It's not sadness. It's not true sadness. I mean, you're sad that he's gone, but then you get the chance to like recant and retell and, you know, the memory of that person comes to life. And so like when George passed the other day, I had all these fond memories, which were great. Like I did not feel sadness. I wasn't sad. I was like, man, like, I'm really glad that I got a chance to know George. Because he made me laugh. He made me laugh all the time.
Do you have, and we all have certain stories. Do you have a story or two or three that instantly come to mind?
I mean, the story he tells of when he's at the courthouse, you know,
the famous, infamous Cook County courthouse story.
Yeah, the Cook County courthouse story, and then There's some that are just private, you can't share, but like, I mean, he was a maniac as a baseball player, and some of the stuff he did early on in his career, you know, you hear about it and you're like, come on, that can't be true. And it's funny too, like he had a really good sense for like watching and understanding the game. Like he was a teacher of baseball and pitching, and like, you know, Jeff Francis reached out because Francis and George would have breakfast all the time. And, like George was kind of a mentor to Jeff Francis as a broadcaster, which is pretty cool from my perspective. Cause I didn't know what the role is of a broadcaster with a baseball player. So it was like really important for me to see that aspect of George, like, wait, you can have relationships with the players. You can be friendly. You can still be critical of the game, but not make it personal. And then you can have a relationship of imparting wisdom. Cause it's not like George wasn't a good baseball player. He was a very, very good baseball player. And so to understand that relationship with Jeff and George, and then knowing, you know, we used to see George in the clubhouse all the time. He was always eating in the back room with Tiny. And I was always thinking to myself, I was like, why the hell is, get this broadcaster out of here? Until I started to learn of George's career. I was like, oh, well, he's
one of you.
He's one of us. Yeah. Yeah, he's one of us. And that is like, that's really empowering for a player when you do have, when you do move on from playing to becoming something else, and then see somebody that was you and that is still accepted within the clubhouse. Cause that's the hardest part for us baseball players is when we stop playing is that we don't have a clubhouse anymore. And so you feel foreign, in the clubhouse. And George certainly showed that that you're part of the clubhouse. And in fact, you're allowed to eat with the players if you want to.
All right, I'm going to bounce around real quick. So we just saw one of your old teammates and a good friend of yours, Aaron Cook, recently. And Cookie told us that, speaking of, I know how Jeff Francis, Franny, as he's known, how close he was with George. Cookie told us that he was one, during his career, George was one of the three most impactful people in his career, in terms of, he would talk about mechanics with him. Mm-hmm. He would talk about the mental side with him. This is George as a broadcaster. No one would know this. And it's not a slight at anybody who's a pitching coach or whatever who was employed as such. But that's how much trust guys like Jeff Francis, guys like Aaron Cook had in George Frazier, television analyst of the Rockies.
Yeah. And that's what stood out, right? Like that's what, I mean, the broadcaster George was great. You know, we have all the liners that he had. I still think the deer with headlights on is the funniest one ever. But I mean, to think about, he was so good at his craft. He was a pitching coach that was broadcasting. And I remember, you know, hearing about his son Parker, or, you know, he's showing us pictures of Georgia, and he was a father, you know, he was all those things. And ultimately, like, he cared for the people that he was around. He shared his time, which is always so, you know, invaluable. We don't get time back. But to share his knowledge like he did with other players and to hear, you know, a Cookie or a Francis or anybody else that says, like, this guy was really important for me. That is, I mean, that gives you a sense of who George is. And I think the last part about that is there certain people that can speak your language in a way that doesn't feel like they're talking down to you or that they're really coaching you. They're just having a conversation and you take from there what you want. And I think that's what made George so special, especially as a broadcaster, as a coach, as a friend, is that he was just there. You know, he was there to impart some some wisdom and just be a good friend, be a good listener, and a hell of a good talker.
Exactly, and I think he'd be pissed at us right now if we didn't do our best to make other people laugh. So we'll go back to the Cook County Courthouse story for a moment. Before that, by the way, some great Frasers. You said a deer with headlights on. He would say, and you're like, what? And then how about, you know, a guy can't reach a slider away and he punches out. He goes, he couldn't hit that instead of with a boat paddle, which we'd all understand. It was a 100-mile-an-hour boat paddle, which I still can't quite figure out.
Sense. Yeah, it makes zero sense. So right. he had his Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma isms. I always loved, you know, if we did call him, I would always answer. If I called him, he would answer, and I always knew where he was. He was on his ranch on a tractor baling hay, you know, and then he'd be in like mid sentence and he was like, hey, so and so is on the other line. I gotta go.
Exactly. Hang up on you right away.
Oh God. So the Cook County Courthouse story, very quickly, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. And this is like a legendary story in baseball, certainly broadcasting circles. I remember Matt Vasgersian like tracking me down a number of years ago. He goes, I heard you tell that story really well. You got to tell me the Frazier Cook County Courthouse story. So here it is. George is pitching for the Cubs. He befriends an attorney in town. Now folks, remember, this is Chicago, Illinois. This is not bumbleep Arkansas, okay? Chicago, Illinois, pretty big city. Cook County Courthouse. George would say, he just throwed lines in too, Spilly, like, you know, you go and get in the elevator and he talks so fast. You go, you know, burglaries on the third floor, rapes on the fourth floor, murders on the fifth floor. And you're like, stop. You're like, is that, there's no numbers on the elevator. That's just, it just says, oh, murder. So I go to this floor, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the details of the story were so outlandish that you're like, okay, there's not fourth floor murders. This isn't a dentist office.
It's crazy. So he's doing this drug case. He's his buddy Bobby, and George is sitting there as co-counsel. So immediately you're like, wait a second, Frazier's not a lawyer. I know that. He may be a clubhouse lawyer, but he's not a real lawyer. And now he's sitting there like co-counsel, and all of a sudden his buddy Bobby tells him to cross-examine the witness. And he's cross-examining, and he says, did you see the drug transaction? And the guy said, yeah. And he said, well, we measured, you were at 4th and Elm, and the drug transaction supposedly took place at 3rd and Elm. You wear glasses, right? And the guy says, yeah. And he goes, what's your vision? He goes, 2400. He goes, well, with 2400 vision, you couldn't have seen the drug transaction. The judge slams the gavel down, case dismissed. And you're cracking up and you're going, wait a second, wasn't there a jury? Or did the judge then look at Frazier and go, hey, didn't you blow the lead in the eighth inning last night of the Cubs game?
In a World Series three times in a row? Yeah, I mean, like, that is the beauty of George Frazier. And I still believe the story, even though it does not sound, it sounds more like he watched my cousin Vinny and then recanted it as his own. But he'll be missed. But at the same time, we can't forget him. I mean, he lives in us with his stories and with some of his great memories.
Yeah. Spilly, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Love you, buddy.
Thanks for indulging me this week as I talk about my dear friend and partner. And I think that caring and that character, you know, blew through the screen into your living rooms, and you, I'm sure, felt a kinship and a warmth from George, even for those that never met him, never truly got to know him, just from watching him all those years on Rocky's broadcasts. And he was a heck of a broadcaster as well, because he could break a game down and intertwine the intricacies of the game, the strategy of the game, with some legendary stories. And he was entertaining. And at the end of the day, that's what sports is about. That's why we watch games, to be entertained. And from an announcer standpoint, he was most entertaining, but he also could teach, and you learn new things as well from George. They broke the mold when they built old George Frazier. And as we close this week, I just want to say, Frazier, thanks for the memories and for the stories that will bring for me and for so many everlasting laughter and always put a smile on our faces. And that is a tremendous legacy. I love you, partner. Rest easy.
So as we close 2023 and we look forward to 2024 with great optimism, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for all that have listened regularly or on occasion, who've passed on your thoughts, whether it's to me when you run into me or in writing or on Cameo or telling your friends about our little podcast. Greatly appreciate it. We have fun doing it. Big thanks to my man, Marky, who's the man behind the scenes. And a thanks to all the folks that joined me this particular year on the podcast. Look forward to doing it again in 2024. We'll get rolling right after the break. To all of you, happy new year, safe new year. And I hope for all great things for you and your families going forward. Take care. We'll do it again in January of 2024.